Chapter 28. Hanmin's Man. Hanmin wanted to leave Risa back at our apartments so that he and I could speak privately, but Risa wasn't having any of it. So there we all were, sitting around in Hanmin's solarium, and I still didn't know if Geffen was relaxing back in his chamber or if he'd been shorn, bathed, uniformed, and shipped to barracks. And I didn't have much time to think about him anyway. Hanmin nearly shoved us through his door, he seemed so excited to get us alone. Me alone, I guess, if he was trying to leave Risa behind. And his solarium was so impressive that I was unable to worry about Geffen for very long. We had to climb several steps to go there, so I reckon we were up in one of the towers. There were windows at each wall, north, south, east, and west, so it had to be a tower. The window along the south wall was very good for letting in Sunna's light, and the room itself was comfortable to be in. There were no tapestries here, like there were in the rest of the keep. Instead, any bit of wall not dedicated to door or window held a map. Maps of all sizes depicting all of Erda, even territory in Valhaz. There were very large maps that showed some of our cities in excruciating detail so that you could learn the names of each street and alley, if only you could see that small. There were very small maps that displayed entire realms and holdings, and each district area was colored differently, as if the color of the land was more important than the shape. There were no paintings, nor any decoration at all. He didn't even bother with a rug. And yet, despite the lack of decor, it seemed to me that the room itself was the decoration. Couches, tables, chairs, scattered around the room so that you thought he might have hosted a party a few hours ago. Shelves along the rear wall holding scrolls, books, loose leaves that appeared as ancient as Erda's mountain. There were models lying around as well, nearly on every vacant surface. Before me, on Hanmin's own desk, which was larger than most beds, was a working model of one of Baldovinus's wheels. Out of curiosity, I picked it up and played with it. I was amazed to see that the wheel turned, and when I looked closer at the little building to which it anchored, I discovered how to open it and look inside. There were little shafts and peg gears inside, all turning in opposing directions as I turned the wheel. It was like watching magic think. It's quite wonderful, isn't it? He sat behind his desk now, hands draped carelessly over the armrests as he watched me. I closed up the little building and put it back on his desk. I'm a little disappointed. I'd heard Baldovinus designed these. Oh, he did. I was just so impressed with his little model that I asked him if I could have it. He's rather clever, you know. As you say. You disagree? I gave this some thought. I'm not sure that clever is what I'd land on. Well, then. He looks like he's losing his fucking mind. Hanmin laughed so hard his face flushed red and tears ran down his cheeks. He was a long time recovering. He wiped his eyes slowly, as if he deeply enjoyed the sensation of doing so, and said, "That's true enough. Very good. I'm glad you're the one to whom Risa finds himself attached. I suspect I'll enjoy you thoroughly." I heard him only with one ear. My eye was held by another device on his desk. It was the most intricate, most magical thing I'd ever seen. It was brass, definitely. I know my metals. But the parts that made it were so small and delicate. I reached out to take it, then hesitated. I put my hand back in my lap. Hanmin noticed what I was looking at, though, so he picked it up and held it out to me. "Please," he said. So I took it. It was heavier than I thought it would be. I fiddled around with it and soon discovered that various parts moved, and they moved in such a way that they caused other parts to move along with them, and it was all so perfect, so correct. There was a bar thinner than the spine of a quill that ran along a curved track, and it made the rest of that instrument dance in the light. And it was all so fucking perfect. When I turned it over in my hands, the light from the window flashed my eyes, nearly blinding me. I discovered there was a mirror attached to the damn thing, and then, as I snorted at it, found yet another fucking mirror. nobles and their numerous fucking mirrors. Look through the tube, Hanmin smiled. I'd seen the tube before he pointed it out, but didn't realize what it was for. Slowly, I lifted it to my eye. Then Hanmin told me to look at him through the tube. I did, and despite all the mirrors in the way, I could still see him. There he was, sitting across from me, so I waved at him like an idiot. Now, continue to look at me, but grasp the vertical arm running along the track and push it away from yourself. Something incredible happened. As I stared through the tube, Hanmin split in half right down the middle and began to slide apart. I felt the pit drop out of my stomach, jerked the thing away from my face, and saw he was still intact. I remember looking down at the device in my hands and said something truly intelligent like, "How the fuck?" "It's fine, Udo. It's an illusion. I'm quite well." I placed it back on his desk. "What is that thing?" I didn't like it at all. "It is a device that tells you where you are." "That seems useless," I said carelessly. "Does it?" I looked at him, saw he was still smiling, and so remembered to not be afraid. "Well, yes, doesn't it? I mean, I'm right here." His teeth were very white and even. "What if you don't know where here is?" Now I looked around the room. I looked out the south window and confirmed Sunna's throne was still where it should be. "But I do know. I'm within Ing's fortress in Colmar. And even if I wasn't here, it wouldn't matter. I can always find Sunna's throne. Can always look overhead to follow the roads or the other rivers. If I climb high enough, say to the top of a tree or hill, or even this excellent tower, I can see nearly everything." Hanmin nodded. "This is all true. And whether you realize it or not, you have intuited the principle of the device. It operates almost in exactly the same fashion, just in very different ways." I scoffed and glanced at Risa, who was obliterating a bowl of fruit at the other end of the solarium.
"He really likes apples," Hanmin noted.
"Yeah," I agreed. Then, "So it operates the same as me looking at things, only different, very different."
"Well, then it's not the same, is it?"
"I said the principle is the same, Udo. The mechanism diverges." "All right," I nodded. I'm sorry, maybe there isn't time for this. What is it, Udo? Please."
"I was wondering if,
He placed a cup of water in front of me. I didn't notice where he got it from. He said, "Drink that. It will help with what's happening to your throat. Let me help. You were going to ask me to instruct you in the instrument's use, weren't you?" "I was. And it was very hard for you to ask."
Yes, it was.
Hanmin sighed.
"We might need to get into that at some point."
"How's that?"
"I cannot instruct you in the instrument's use, Udo, because it does not work in this world."
"It doesn't?"
"No.
We'll say the geometry is all wrong."
"Well, why in hell's name do you have the thing? What is it good for?"
Hanmin leaned forward in his chair abruptly, as if he would say something of deep importance, then smiled and settled back. I think he must have seen me shrink away, so he settled back and waited a few moments. But it seemed he was waiting for himself rather than me.
"It's a good reminder. Bodies such as ours are forgetful things, my boy, and it is good to have it."
"A reminder of what?"
"That one day, On, or Godin, that one day Godin willing, we may need it."
"You mean it will work one day? That the geometry,
yeah,
that whatever that is will be right?"
"Yes."
"No."
"Well, which is it?"
He dropped a roll of parchment over the device so that I could no longer see it. I didn't bring you here to discuss tomorrow, Udo. I brought you here to discuss yesterday. No, no. Be at ease. I'm asking now about your time with Risa. You must tell me all that has transpired. I guess he thought that was better, but to my mind, that was far worse. Dittmar had just proclaimed to his court that Risa was the no-shit son of Tyr, which, who knows, really. He was Ing's son, or Pisha's son, goddammit. That was certain. But Tyr's involvement was little more than a guess, as far as I could tell. As well be the son of any god, really, and still have that size and speed. Wouldn't any god produce such a child? I said as much to Hanman, but he only shook his head. He said something like, "Gods build according to their need." It wasn't quite like that. Close enough, I hope. Log insertion. The exact phrasing was, "Gods address the needs of the problem, not the whim of ego." So then I had to explain a few things. I had to think a while to get all my thoughts together. Then I had to select which ones to share and which should be discarded. I spent a lot of time on avoiding Ing at first, until Hanman prodded me. And he seemed to know all the ways to prod that would uncover her involvement, so ultimately I had to talk about her. When I gave in, I spent a lot of time on how she chose me, and how she'd said I was her son as well. I talked a long time over these things. I described how bandits had attempted to rob us on the road, and how I'd saved Risa from them, and how I'd kept him safe from the recruiters. I told how desperate we'd been on the road, and how I'd been forced to showcase his strength just to keep our bellies filled. I told him everything. Everything I could and could not understand. I told it all. I told most of it all. He rested his chin in his hand as I described our time together, Risa and I, and his fingers hid his mouth. His eyes smiled, though, through my entire speech. I did not know what his smiling eyes meant specifically, but I thought I was doing pretty well. He nodded in the places he was supposed to nod, and didn't need to interrupt me at all for clarification. We were getting along. Man, I was doing all right. I ran out of things to say, so I just sat in my chair and waited. I wanted to look at the device again, but the parchment was still hiding it, so I looked out the window. "You've been to Colmar before?" "No." "Yes." He laughed. "Well, which is it?" "Sorry, yeah, I've been here. It was a long time ago." "Things look different?" I continued to look out his window. "All those ships are new." "Ah, yes, the fleet. At last count, I think you're seeing only half of them. The others are either being built or are already moored in Valhaz. Baldovinus's wheels are new, too." "The wheels brought the ships." I nodded. "It's been a while." "It has, Udo. It has. You may be inspired to tour the city later." "No. And yet you may. Take a valet if you do. If you wish to visit the Warrens, take a guard. It's a dangerous area, as you may have heard." When you're young, you look at all the rich people living in large estates and you think it must be pretty nice. You see the army of servants catering to every whim, and you think to yourself, well, I bet if one of those servants looks nice enough, the lord of the manor could probably tell her to disrobe and do the deed. Or a man, even, if that's what the lord preferred. These kinds of things seem desirable when you are young. What really happens is that you can't get a moment to yourself. They're all around you constantly, and they're not fulfilling every little desire you have so much as they're shuttling you from place to place so that you can do the next thing you're supposed to do. Sometimes I'd watch Dittmar pace through the halls of Ing's house, trailing a collection of handlers who all flitted like gnats. I thought he looked more like a horse being exercised in a pen than a king. I never told him so, obviously. One of these handlers came for me, too, the next morning. He must have been banging on the door a long time, because when I finally awoke, he was bent over me like an old crow in a stupid hat. He frightened the shit out of me when he joggled my shoulder, and yeah, I may have slapped him across the face harder than he deserved, but he really scared me. You don't ever shake a man out of a dead sleep like that. He's lucky I didn't stab him. He stood there, rubbing his face and staring at me in this sick, impotent hatred, while I sat up on the couch and tried to massage my head back to wakefulness. Risa snored on obliviously somewhere behind my right shoulder. He'd been at it all night, and yet when I'd finally given up on finding sleep, sleep found me. I still felt like I'd only had a short nap, though, and it was difficult to get the old juices juicing.
You must get dressed and come at once, gentle master. You are summoned,
the old crow was saying. He continued to rub his face when he called me gentle master, and I wanted to laugh, but decided not to.
Who's summoning? I croaked.
The insides of my throat were stuck together, and it was like trying to speak through sand.
The Lord Hanman, good master. He awaits you in his solarium. Please, you must hurry.
Right. Damn it. Right. Wants to see Risa too?
Only you, master.
Udo.
Please, you must-
I get it. Wait out there a while, I'll clean up a bit and be right there.
I will send attendants to-
Oh, Thunayr's crashing asshole, you will. The first person you send through that door to dress me gets doused in a pint of my own piss.
For the love of-
Go on, pray your way the fuck out into the hallway. I'll be out soon, I said. I closed my eyes and breathed slowly until the door shut. When I opened them, it was just me, Risa, and Risa's snoring in that room. I started feeling better. I didn't like seeing the old crow's red cheek. It annoyed me, and when he was gone, it was easier to think. I held my hand out and stared at it a while. It should have been trembling, but it wasn't. I thought about that. I tried to think back to the last time I'd seen my hand tremble and found nothing. I tried to think back to the last time I'd drunk anything worth drinking, and couldn't remember that either. When had that happened? I could not recall. I remembered back to when the drink and the shake was the only thing I had to worry about. There I was in the king's fortress, summoned to the chamber of his prime minister to discuss whatever it was that prime ministers felt like discussing so early in the goddamned morning, and I fantasized about the better days when things were so much easier. Then I pissed into the chamber pot, smoothed my hair down, and found the old crow in the hall. He must not have liked my appearance. He shuddered and said,
"You really should have accepted the attendance."
"You're probably right," I said. And he was right, I'm sure. I felt horrible, certainly looked horrible. I don't remember smells from that time so well, but then my nose does very little in the morning besides getting in the way of my breathing, so I suppose I couldn't smell anything, probably. I'd wager he smelled me, though. He walked quickly down the hall as if trying to escape me. He was a high country, chiseling bastard.
"There is much to prepare, Udo. You are to be landed and titled. And as I doubt you're familiar with the ceremonies involved, I will spend time with you over the next few days to prepare for what will be expected."
Hanman stopped talking and just watched me. I must have said something because he laughed, but I don't remember much right after he spoke. I had to keep thinking about what he'd told me and what it meant.
You said landed
and titled, yes. Dittmar was thinking of count of some sort, perhaps up north, somewhere. He seems to be under the impression you came from those lands. He smiled.
Why?
I have advised him to do so.
You?
What have I done? The son of a bitch laughed for a while, then wiping his eyes, he says,
"Well, it isn't necessarily true, but I advised him if he wanted the giant, he would have to keep you close at hand."
It wasn't that hard to convince him, honestly. I think Dittmar is quite fond of you. You should be glad.
He's fond? Oh, as fond as the poor wretch can be.
You haven't thanked me yet.
Thank you.
You don't sound thankful, Udo.
I'm not.
I am.
Oh, by hell.
He laughed again and said,
"It is much to take in, I agree. and I'll spare you the need to explain your unease. I know very well what you're thinking right now. How? It's writ all over your face. Listen, try to hold your tongue a moment so I can give you all the news at once, please. This is taking far too long. Yeah. You're about to be elevated to the position of count, with the location of your seat yet to be determined, and given a command in our army.
A command?
Please, Udo, just let me. Yes, a unique position, formerly commander, reporting directly to the Lord Gerald of Gutach. Gerald the Mad? Oh, you really shouldn't call him that, Udo. Right. Oh, my heart. You're shipping me to the front. Yes, you and Risa. Oh, and Geffen as well. You did mention he's with you. We'll make sure he sails on your ship to keep you all together. Now, please calm down, Udo. You won't be expected to do any fighting. Risa either, honestly. Dittmar is convinced you're far too valuable. What the fuck are we supposed to do then? Hanman smiled in the way that was cold. You are to stand Risa out in the open where our men can see him best, and tell the stories about him that I give you to tell, and tell them to the people I point out. You're coming with us? Oh, yes. There's much to discuss, Udo. Very much. He stood from his desk, passed from my field of view, and then I heard his door open behind me. Walk with me, Udo. You said I had to go in order to watch Risa? To keep him happy, or essentially. But you also said that wasn't true. Essentially. Then why the fuck must I go? Can I not just enjoy your company? You're a likable man, Udo. Likable? Predictable, then. For one such as me, likability and predictability are usually equivalent. Come on now. Let's have a walk. There was a carriage waiting in the courtyard, something more suited to a lady than one of my nature. It had a roof and some small doors you had to step through, and the windows all had gauzy curtains that could be drawn to shut out the world. They were my favorite thing about the carriage, those curtains. A driver and valet stood at attention by the door, and when they saw us emerge from the keep, the valet, I could tell he was the valet by the silly red hat he wore, held the door for us and bowed double. I watched him standing like that a few moments, curious as to how long he might remain so, but then saw the guards on horseback. There were five of them, clad all in shining steel and armed with long swords. None of them bowed. They just watched us as we approached, as if their presence was the only acknowledgement we required or deserved. I tried bowing as well when Hanman gestured to the carriage, and I really want to say here that I did a fair job of it. He smiled anyway, though, and it was so hard to read the thoughts that smile hid that, as always, there was no way to know what I was stepping into. I wanted very much not to step into a new pile of shit. Things had been going so well I'd nearly forgotten the feel of the stuff on the bottom of my foot. But I guess there's always more out there. You go around waiting for it, not knowing from where it will come, really. Just knowing it will. Your guts run sour so that you can feel the churning beneath your tongue, as if you need to vomit, and your arms feel weak, your knees feel weak. Your bowels feel weak, too, so that you always want to find somewhere to shit, and no matter how much you try to shit, still there is more. It's a terrible feeling to get used to, and yet get used to it you will, if it's there long enough. You learn to make it through the day with that sickness. Even learn to concentrate on other things eventually. But it's always in there. It's there until the day is over and you must sleep. And only then does it become truly awful. It does not matter how tired you become. That sickness will keep you awake. For the end of the day when sleep is required, there is only the drink. If you can get the drink, you may yet remember how to live normally, if living normally is something any of us can do. I felt that sickness when I climbed into the carriage. Felt it rise in my throat when Hanman settled in and the valet shut the door. We sat across from each other in the tiny space, he smiling, I breathing through an open mouth that would not stop watering. And before I was ready, we lurched forward. Backward for me, anyway. I was facing to the rear. The carriage lurched onto the pitted road when we exited the main gate, a kind of rolling gait that might have reminded me of a horse if it was more regular. I could hear the hooves of the horses clopping around us, those pulling the carriage and those of our guards. I saw the guards sometimes, eclipsing my view through the windows as they strutted by. They would look into the windows as if to confirm we were still within. It reminded me of when we'd been imprisoned, and I soon leaned away from the openings to hide. I wanted very much to draw the curtains, but Hanmen kept pointing out different streets and shops to tell me their stories, many of which I already knew. He seemed drawn into the practice, though, so I said nothing to interrupt him. He began by pointing out Colmar's First Canal, a distributary that had separated from the Ruhr naturally some time ago. "How long?" I asked, to be polite, though I knew. Anyone living in the city knew. It was local lore, after all. "Long before the first Teodiskins came to live here," he said, as if he knew for sure. "The smaller river that split from the Ruhr became the basis of Colmar, which tradition tells us was once a fishing village in the days before the first kings, when there were only chieftains and their horses, and the number of horses dictated their wealth. The chieftains had fallen out of favor at some point along the way, probably through a process of elimination due to raids and other squabbles, until a few of the truly rich ones remained. You still see them in the north from time to time, living among their old family clans, but the title has now come to mean something very different. In my time, the time in which I rode through Colmar in a carriage with the man who was most likely the most dangerous in all of Erda, the chieftain was just the head of a goodly-sized family. In some cases, a village with a chieftain still had a mayor. This in cases where the population was large enough or there were many other families living in the same area. The chieftain was still subject to the will of the mayor, if there was one, and we were all of us subject to the will of the nobility. They sure did like to strut around as if they were more, though. At some point in our history, don't ask me when, I suppose men must have dug a trench from that stream so that it would rejoin the Ruhr, though I never learned why. The stories we told each other as youngsters said that this all happened before the gods viewed digging unfavorably, before Ing had crafted her Dvergaz children. I used to swear this was the truth, mostly because the boy we all followed swore it was so. Then one day, while picking pockets outside of Godin's temple, outside of the temples are a wonderful place for this activity if you can keep from being seen, I overheard the priest essentially confirm this idea in his sermon, so of course I had to run and tell the others. That had been a very good day. I drank all night for free on that story. At some point, though, whether through the efforts of God or man, the offshoot was reconnected back to the Ruhr so that the eventual city of Colmar, which would grow steadily throughout the generations, straddled both the Ruhr and her first canal. The canal became useful for floating goods from one end of the city to the other, and so they dug more canals, smaller canals, and connected many of them together. Later, the roads were paved over and made permanent, and the design of the buildings became more permanent as they were torn down and rebuilt repeatedly through the many generations of the men who lived there. So, Hanmen explained to me as we passed over Wallace's bridge and into the river district beyond. So I pretended to hear for the first time as he told me. "Are you well, Udo?" The question came from nowhere. He'd been going on about the canals without taking a breath, so when I heard my name, it was jarring. "What?" "You keep making a face. Your lips twist around as though you've smelled something foul. Is it the city? I imagine our bouquet is less than agreeable to a country visitor." "Oh, no, it's all right, Lord." "Hanmen? Am I to call you Hanmen now?" "Yes, quite right. Thanks. Yeah, I was going to say it's this blasted cart. Upsets the guts thoroughly. I'm not really used to it. Please ignore me." "Oh, that's interesting," he smiled. "I was under the impression you had a wagon at one point. A wagon much larger than this." I did. And that you took it all through the countryside.
Yeah. And you never had this problem then? On all the rutted roads?
Well, not really. Risa rode inside. I was out in the open air with the donkeys. They, that is, I always did better in the open air.
As long as it was fresh, of course.
I'm sorry, Lord?
As long as the air was fresh. I dare say the smells encountered here are an assault for a stranger to our city.
Yeah, pretty much. I looked out the window to escape his smile.
Hunman fell silent for a while and seemed to content himself by patting his knees. He did so in an odd, stuttering rhythm that I could not predict, and he sighed happily to himself sometimes. He seemed happier as we went, while my guts continued sour. Eventually, I wondered if he was doing it to fuck with me. Pretty soon, he spoke again.
Here's a scent to pull you up short, Udo.
Here. I've something for you. He rummaged about inside of his vest and pulled out a long, frilled handkerchief. I stared at it like a deaf mute when he held it out, so he bounced his hand at me until I took it. Then he produced another one and held it to his mouth. I did the same and noted the smell of many different flowers and spices. These smells were aggressive enough to make my eyes water, enough so that I wondered if the alternative wasn't better.
They call this district Old Town, Hanman said through the fabric.
He repeated himself when I leaned forward to hear him better. Then,
the locals call it the Warrens.
It's an unfortunate place.
There is an orphanage that has been long burdened with the unwanted.
So many orphans, as if this is where people have decided to come when they no longer wish their children and leave them on our streets. I imagine we could build more, perhaps use taxes for the effort. And yet I suspect, most rightly, that we could turn all of Colmar into an orphanage and still lack the room. The war has not helped matters, surely. I looked beyond the window of my new life into that of my old life. I saw my old places. Some of these places were good for sleeping. Some of them were good for eating or for fighting. Some of them were good for stashing treasure. What passed for treasure with a cobble rat? Food, mostly. I watched as Hanman described my old places to me, getting them correct sometimes, and I pretended to hear it all newly. I pulled the kerchief from my face and breathed. They were still my places. He continued on about the things they were doing to address these problems, and about the refugees who had come in from the coastal towns seeking safety from the southern raiding parties. They came in small, fast boats called Gnar that could outrun our larger vessels. 3 Nurir to a party, usually, that would anchor out of sight in the dark, torches doused. They came on foot to the homes and shops, sometimes first to the guardhouse if the town was large enough to have one, put it all to flame, and kill the owners who fled a death in fire. According to Hanman, we had reports that the demons from Valhaz, for so they were called, called this a trade in steel. This act of choosing a bleeding death over the burning kind. If I had to guess, most of the people who accepted the trade didn't even know they were making a choice. I'm sure most of them awoke to the heat and the ash in their lungs and ran groggily to their own murder. Those spared were taken as slaves, the women and children too young to fight, and the ones who escaped, the lucky few, were the refugees who came finally to Colmar. Or in other words, Hanman explained, the number of survivors were always small, and yet that small percentage now strained the Warrens dangerously, so that extra guards had been appointed to defend against a potential riot. We are making a place for them north of here, where they can go and rebuild. Yet the wound is grievous, I'm afraid. From the coast comes our greatest supply of fish, and the pickled variety is a staple to our navy, which, of course, places strain upon our overburdened farmers, and on it goes. I was only half listening to this, and so spoke thoughtlessly when I said,
Make 'em someone else's problem, eh? Smart thinking. Who's the poor bastard as gets stuck with 'em?
He didn't answer at first, so I glanced back at him. He was still smiling, though his eyes were dark. He eventually spoke, his mouth moving slowly as if tasting each word. "They are conveyed to Ostenbezirk, our king's home county." The sour rot churning through my guts strengthened. It was as if a wave of poison washed through my veins. I resumed looking through my window and decided not to speak again unless spoken to. Another resolution I would soon break when the carriage lurched and yawned. I felt the turn as he swung about. Looking out the window, I saw the new street and realized our direction. A while later, when I heard the hollow wooden knocking of the bridge beneath our team's hooves, I knew where he was taking me. "And now, I turn your attention from our great heartbreak to our greater pride. The Trade District, or, as some of the court has come to call it, Ditmar's Forge. Here you will find the many craftsmen of Colmar, all of whom now apply their skills to the cause. All of them constantly, ropers, smiths, carpenters, boyers, armorers, leatherworkers, candlemakers, glassblowers, clothiers, shipwrights, painters, all of them working tirelessly to outfit the army, and more arriving from the surrounding boroughs each week. Soon we must expand outside the city walls to keep them all. But the earliest tradesmen, the generational tradesmen, you'll find their families here, in this district. Here in this district, the finest wares in our realm. Note these shops, please, Udo, as we pass. Keep a lookout for those artisans you feel are skilled enough to address the challenge of arming and armoring a giant." It was very hard for me to concentrate on what he said. The only thing I could really think of at the time was where we were. That and our direction, and where it would eventually take me. I swallowed and took many deep breaths, wondering if I would soon be spewing out the window. "Udo? Udo, are you well?" "No. No? I'm sorry, you're not. No. No, I... Give me a moment, please. The carriage again? Shall we pull over and walk a while?" "No, it won't help." "Oh, won't it? You know it won't." He sat up and perched on the edge of his seat, eyes suddenly gleaming, two straight teeth flashing at me in the dim light. "Oh, what do I know?" I refused to answer. Hanman did not ask again. I don't know how much longer we rode along. I couldn't focus on anything. Before I realized what was happening, the carriage had come to a halt, and the valet was opening the door for us. Hanman indicated I should go first, and I'm quite proud of the way I went. My hands didn't tremble, not for fear or lack of drink. And I felt the strength in my shoulders when I stepped into the street. My knee nearly buckled, though, so I took a quick step and struck at my thigh as though it had gone to sleep. Directly ahead of me was Mathis's old smithy. Its doors stood wide open to the street, admitting a few dusty rays of sunlight. I saw the old entry hall, the flight of stairs leading up to the apprentices' quarters. There were a number of armed men loitering by the doorway. Oh, what is this? This is... "You there! Guard!" Hanman shouted. There were many of them, the guards, all on foot. They wore Ditmar's colors front and back, and stood as if leaving their positions was more than their life was worth. They'd been leaning on their spears when I exited the carriage, then snapped to attention when Hanman joined me. The one addressed rushed over to join us and saluted Hanman like he was his captain. "How might I serve, Lord?" he asked. "What has happened here? Tell me at once." "Murder, my lord, of the master of this house." Hanman favored me with shocked eyes and said, "When?" "Some of his neighbors suspect it was just last night, my lord. Mathis was sighted at his forge yestereve with two apprentices. We have this from numerous accounts. Here today, we can't find a single apprentice."
"How many apprentices did he have?" Hanman asked.
4 seems the most common number, my lord."
4. And none can be found?" The guard nodded sadly.
"Expect they's for the warrens now, if not fled to country."
"Fled? Why would they flee?"
I stepped away to get a look at the forge in the yard, but still heard the guard say, "I'd imagine, my lord, that one of them did for Mathis."
They must have all fled, imagining they'd be questioned.
I grunted at this statement, as well as when he said the sheriff was on his way to make further inquiries. They wouldn't find anything, of course. I rested on the rail surrounding the old yard and waited for Hanman to join me. It took him longer than I thought it should, but he eventually found his way over. I discovered when he came that I was no longer sour in the guts. The soreness had gone at some point, so quietly I didn't notice its passage. All that remained was kind of a coolness. It is the same coolness you feel at dice when the dice finally leave your hand and you know that the rest must lie in the hands of the gods. I apologize for this, Udo.
All right. He was one of our finer artisans, Mathis. I was hoping to engage his services for something special, something for Risa. I believe Mathis could have done something amazing for our friend. You wouldn't believe his work, Udo. He was very good.
I imagine I could.
You could?
I could believe his work.
Yes. Yes, maybe you could.
I imagine, personally, that there are many things you could believe.
I said nothing. Yes, many things.
Could you believe, I wonder, in our cause? Could you believe in the importance you and Risa will play?
I sighed and hung my head.
I think you know I could.
Why should I know such a thing?
Fuck you. You know that, too.
Yes, Udo. Tell me.
What do I know?
You know damned well that I'm your man at this point. What would you have of me? I felt a hand on my shoulder.
Come back to the carriage, Udo. I think we understand each other very well now. But there is much more to discuss.